From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll check out two new exhibits at the Indianapolis Arts Center.
I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's holiday concerts with friends.
And I'll find out what is so tiny at the Arts Council of Indianapolis' holiday show. Plus, there'll be our Arts Calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Two men, both in their early 70s, are mounting their first ever art exhibits this December at the Indianapolis Art Center in Broad Ripple. Travis DiNicola spoke with the two septuagenarians, George Kim and Ak Lengig, about their work.
George, Ak, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thank you, Travis.
And congratulations to both of you for what is essentially your first show of your work. This is kind of fascinating. I think you both have shared some parallel paths, perhaps, even though you haven't really met or until now, but you're going to be exhibiting together. George, let me start with you. I believe you said you're 71, is that right?
Yes.
And you've always worked in carbon, as we were just saying before we went on the air, but the work that you do as an artist is in wood. And this is your first show of your wood sculptures.
Correct.
Beautiful wood sculptures.
Thank you.
Figurative, abstracted, elongated wood. How did you get into this?
Slowly at first, small pieces here and there, but over time, larger and larger, until they got to be logs. Got to know farmers who would clear their land, drop logs. Invariably, the old growth walnut trees are gone. Now it's basically new stuff. But I would be able to buy stumps, large stumps, you know, like half-ton kind of stumps, because when the trees grow, there's a lot of rot and insect things going on. Sometimes people are putting signage on these things to keep out private property, stuff like that. And so what happens is when these big black walnut logs get harvested, generally the first 2 or 3 feet are chopped off and set aside. And I just happened to find out about that around 30 years ago when I did. And I just would go there and say, what's that? And, well, that's, you know, bad wood, and we don't take it any farther. Well, you know, you got somebody, you can put it on a truck and drop it off to me in Indianapolis. And invariably, I'd, you know, hustle some kids to get together to rent a truck and do that. And over the past 30-some years...
Someone else's bad wood has become pretty wonderful material for you to work with.
Yes, broken a lot of my saw blades and my chisels because you'd run into these nails and artifacts. And in a way, that sparked my methodology of how I'd work. I wouldn't work with anything in mind. You know, strip the bark off first, take out the dead wood or the diseased wood, and then just kind of go with it.
Mm-hmm.
And over a period of maybe 5 or 6 weeks, something starts to materialize.
Now, your training, though, is not as a sculptor. You are trained as an engineer, worked in mirrors with diamonds. That's where the carbon came from, of course.
Yes.
I mean, that's your professional background.
Yes.
When did you start working in wood as outside of, I mean, it sounded, my understanding is from what I've read about you, is sort of a way to maybe relieve some of the stress of your work as an engineer.
Kind of. Mostly I started working in wood when I came to Indianapolis. I got hired by RCA, and they wanted to build a factory and make stuff out of diamonds.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted me in particular to develop with a group of lots of PhDs and engineers and people like that, a technique and a technology for taking diamonds, orient them very tightly, and make very small, like diamond styli, with a little footprint, about 2 microns by 6 microns. 5 of them would fit in one of your hairs. I've always done things with my hands. Like when we were working at the labs, I take little pieces of metal and solder and I'd put them together and I'd coat them in the bell jar with gold and I'd make things. And then after that, it slowly went from that into, I think I got into wood early because in Chicago, Dutch elm disease, they cut down a bunch of trees on everybody's block and there was wood. And so I said, free wood. And so I started carving with chisels and a, you know, a plumber's hammer, like that, and made a few pieces, liked it. And then a friend who happened to be passing through Indianapolis said, George, I picked up this piece of black walnut, you know, and okay, fine. And I liked it because it turned black when I put linseed oil in the back. So then that job kind of petered out, came to Indianapolis to work for RCA, work with them. And while I was here, befriended a number of people who had black walnut. And that is how I de-gauged myself, got away from what I was doing, which was very technical, very pressing, running around the world, all that kind of stuff. And I would then take my weekends or whatever time I had with the solitude of working with chisels and wood.
And you have taken quite a different path, but you're also showing at the Art Center for your first exhibit. You're 72 years old. Now, I know that you've, most of your career has at least been maybe a little bit closer to the arts in some ways.
I come from a pretty artistic family. You know, my my father was an architect, and so was my grandfather. And my mother, you know, she was also artistic in her own way. Very reluctant, though, but and she was a great musician. So
the work that you're doing for the Art Center, Center's exhibit, it's it the title is The Tracks of Time.
That's right.
Correct. Tell me a bit about this work.
Well, I have a very unusual theme. I paint basically pavements, pavements that serve humanity to as a you know as a something to, that they can move on and something that they can transport their goods and stuff over.
Pavement, concrete, sidewalks.
Yes, yes, exactly. It's a curb of the world of curbstones, asphalt, bricks, tiles, etc., etc., etc. And what it makes it even more unusual, because I don't think that's ever been done before like that. You know, I mean, you see streets, of course, in paintings of famous painters, like I think of about my countryman, Vincent van Gogh, Van Gogh, they say here. but it's always part of something else. Let's say a lot of things are around it, and what I did is I removed all the things that don't count for me, and so I just show the streets and the pavements as they are, and not only as they are, but I don't show them in their glory. I would say I show them in how they are impacted by not only human wear and tear and all kind of events that's happening to them over time, but also the natural forces that work on their surface and beneath the surface, I would like to say. And that has been challenging, and that has been fascinating theme for me for a very long time. And what I basically found out is what I love about it is the what I call the dialogue between the man-made world, you know, metric, predictable, controllable, hard and edgy sometimes, versus the natural forces working on it. You know, they're unpredictable, they're spontaneous, and I love the dialogue. And it is a different kind of language, I would say. It is not like human language. It's more like a visual language. But if, to me, it's like poetry sometimes.
And these are large-scale works, is that
correct? Yes, we might say that. I just finished a piece that is 144 inches wide. So that is 12 feet wide by 80 inches high. And it is the biggest piece I've ever made.
So the paintings that you've made, I've just seen photographs so far at this point, but I mean they are large scale, but they have a very realistically, I mean they look like you could touch them and you'd be touching stone and concrete.
Yes, yeah, they basically, that is an interesting thing that people always, when I'm telling them that I'm painting or they know that I'm painting, they say, well, do you paint concrete, representational, or do you paint abstract?
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell people, well, it depends on your perspective. And I mean that literally. Because, you know, one of the plights of our human existence here on Earth is that we always take, assume a position somewhere. And from that position, we look, we have a point of view. And from that point of view, we look at things in perspective. So we are trained, our brain is trained to see things three-dimensionally in perspective. Now, if you look at my paintings and you have done that, you will see that all my paintings in the Tracks of Time series are built up around converging lines. And when the viewer interprets those converging lines as perspective, then our brain miraculously forces to see all the details and interpret all the details in terms of three-dimensionality. It's very interesting, actually, to discover that. For example, white and black are perceived as shadow and light. A shadow also corroborates the impression of three-dimensionality because, you know, nothing that is three-dimensional doesn't have a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
So it is actually very interesting what people experience that way. And that is kind of comforting for people that don't relate to abstract works.
Let me ask you both this question.
Yeah.
You're both gentlemen who've had successful careers, you're in your early 70s, and here you are now embarking on something totally new by having your first art exhibit of
right.
your work. And I'm curious what that has brought up for you as far as specific challenges, opportunities, excitement. George, I'll start with you.
I think it's just evolution.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've always enjoyed art. I've traveled a lot, and wherever I'd go, I'd go to art institutes, art museums, art places. I've always enjoyed people and what they'd make and do. And somehow or another, it seemed like, yeah, I've always liked to create things.
Mm-hmm.
And having the supply of wood, developing my own techniques and manner of going about making things out of wood. I've never shown before. I've
mm-hmm.
never sold a piece. I've given a number of them away to friends. I don't plan on selling in the future. I really don't know what's supposed to happen. I have a couple, 300 pieces maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know. I don't really care about that. I just like to find myself with my chisels and my chainsaws and
mm-hmm.
sandpapers and like that. And I just like to find myself that. And more recently, when I turned 70 and had a bad go at it at work because we worked on some military projects and they really had high hopes for them and it didn't turn out. And I invented some stuff and really thought the military could really use it and it didn't turn out and that project went black. And the consequence of that is I left work and I went kind of like into myself.
Mm-hmm.
And
uh-huh.
if it weren't for my wood, I don't think I would have made it out of the other end of it. And somehow or another, getting into wood to get me out of my, I don't know what it was, depression, and pull myself away from that kind of work, I just got into wood, and now I find myself making my life about it. I have many pieces, like maybe 300 pieces. And for this show that I'm having, I've selected, I think, a dozen or something
mm-hmm.
like that. And I don't really know. I don't really care about what happens to it or where it goes or anything. I just got a 10-room house, and they just seem to be filled with pieces. And that doesn't bother me. Just I like working wood. I like doing these things, and that's kind of it.
Alec, let me ask you the same question. How is it for you approaching your first exhibit of your paintings?
Well, it's a major turning point in my life. As you probably know, I have led a quite a different life. I have been a consultant for many big corporations, being an industrial psychologist for a long time. But I've always been very artistic, you know, from childhood on. But I never really saw myself as an artist just because I did not choose that kind of profession. And now that business has been taken care of and I get older, I have rediscovered or tapped again into the drive that I have. And what it is about is that I just recently discovered is that basically in my artwork, and I hear something similar in George's story, it is my way of exploring the world and processing my experience. And as such, I make a lot of discoveries, which I basically would like to share with the world. So, and just like George said, I don't really care what happens to us because, mm-hmm. you know, the Indianapolis Art Center that discovered both of us said, you know, we can't guarantee that we're going to sell anything. I said, don't worry about this kind of thing because, you know, it would be nice. And maybe it happens, maybe it happens not, but I don't really care. my purpose is to share my experience with the world. And that's basically what motivates us. You know, it wouldn't hurt, but, you know, it is basically what those guys gave me is an opportunity to get recognition because that is important for me, that, you know, that people think that I'm contributing something worthwhile and something that is also good because that is the kind of standards that I have for myself, you know, to make a real contribution to the art scenes. And I haven't been sure about it for a long time in my life, but now that I see my work developing and also, you know, what is very important, Travis, is that I discovered that all those, let's say, the cracks and dents and blots, whatever, in my microcosmos that I'm painting in the streets actually reflect the changes in our society today. And that made me decide that my work is relevant and is contemporary at the moment. So that also helped me to actually plunge into this big adventure with the Indianapolis Art Center because they recognize that also.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for coming to Art of the Matter and wish you best of luck with the opening of your shows.
Thank you, Travis.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Travis DeNicola with artist George Kim and Ak Lengeek. Both gentlemen have exhibits of their work opening at the Indianapolis Art Center on Friday, December 7th. For more information, visit IndianapolisArtCenter.org. That's IndPLSArtCenter.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Indianapolis Symphonic Choir has gone to the dogs. Out of the doghouse, that is. The choir's executive director, Michael Petrie, explained it all to Sharon Gamble.
Okay, so as we're having this conversation, there are scalpers on the street selling tickets for your holiday concert. I'm only exaggerating a little bit. Congratulations.
Oh, ticket sales are going so well this year.
That's fantastic.
It is the season,
right? It is the season. Yep.
Tis the season for good choral music.
Indeed. Festival of Carols, this is a long-standing tradition for the choir. How long?
Many, many years. Suffice
Decades?
It to say. Oh, generations.
Yeah.
Yes. It's the choir's 76th season.
Right.
And at least 25 of those have included Festival of Carols.
Oh, yay. Good deal. And as always, you're partnering with some other folks. Let's talk about the cast of singers and other musicians.
That's exactly right. So in addition
Cecil
to...
Cecil B. DeMille helped you.
Everybody. in addition to 150 symphonic choir members, we'll also have students from Greenfield Central High School, which is part of outreach that we do with local high schools annually on this concert. An excellent group. They're magical singers. Talented in their own right, but will be great with the choir as well. Plus the Circle City Ringers. Indianapolis has its own semi-professional, if you will, bell choir, community bell choir. And it's beautiful to listen to, but beautiful and just stunning to watch as well. Such an elegant art form.
About how many performers are there?
They told me, does this make any sense? There are 6 octaves of ringers.
Wow.
So I think that's probably high teens or maybe 20 musicians.
For heaven's sakes, that's cool.
It'll ring a bell, I'm sure.
Oh, stop it.
And of course, our friends from the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra will be playing. That's always a pleasure to be with them. But wait, there's more. That's right.
Roof, roof.
Is that a Blue 3 that I
it
hear
was.
There from Butler? Yeah, the Butler University. Out of the Doghouse, the all-male ensemble, they're a riot.
So for people who don't know them but maybe know Straight No Chaser, is that the sort of...
Bingo.
Yeah.
A cappella fun, up-tempo characters, a little bit of sass from the stage, I'm sure.
No.
Working with all the ladies in the crowd.
All right.
Yeah.
So it's hard enough to coordinate. I realize that the members of the symphonic choir who get together regularly to rehearse are very committed, but now you're adding all these layers. How many rehearsals do you all get together?
Everybody together?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're asking how the sausage is made. But
I am.
It's just that day, candidly.
Wow.
You know, the choir rehearses usually about for 6 weeks,
mm-hmm.
leading up to a specific concert the symphonic choir does, depending on the challenge. It could be 8 weeks. So 6 weeks for these concerts. And that day, the first performance is at Scottish Rite, and that afternoon we'll just be together on stage for about 2 hours, tutti.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
talented folks.
I guess. That's a lot of, but, you know, lest our listeners think, ooh.
They've all been rehearsing.
There's a lot of preparation,
individually,
a lot of rehearsal individually. Yeah,
exactly,
yeah.
Right.
Can you tell us anything about repertoire?
Yeah. You know, this is kind of... I would say a fresh new year for this concert. It's been, as I said, 20, 25 years,
mm-hmm.
whatever. It's rebirth this year. Still high quality, as people expect from the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir, but with some old favorites. Pieces by Arthur Harris talk about old Hollywood music, and Robert Shaw's Many Moods of Christmas that he recorded.
Oh, my gosh. How many of you listeners do you have that? Did you inherit that on vinyl? Yeah, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. That will be a real a pleasure. Part of that will be a sing-along. We know that folks like to sing
Yay.
Along their favorite carols. And, you know, something that I'm really excited about is music by Carmen Dragon. And we remember him from the Hollywood Bowl.
Love Carmen Dragon. Mm. Such lush, rich, just festive, focused, exciting arrangements.
Yeah. It's kind of classic Hollywood,
yeah.
right? Golden Age. So His Joy to the World, and I think one other Carmen Dragon piece.
Whoa.
The coolest thing is when you call to talk to the Carmen Dragon Library out in Hollywood.
Yeah.
You talk with his daughter.
No way.
I mean, how cool is that?
Aww.
You're talking to the daughter. It's like in the family.
Unbroken chain.
So they're pretty thrilled to have these performed here.
Wow. And let's talk about your venues.
Stunning. Right. The first show, early in December right there, is at the Scottish Rite Cathedral in the beautiful ballroom, that oak-paneled ballroom. You know, I have to admit, tickets for that are now, they're gone. But we do have...
So guard them if you already have
that's
them.
Right. Congratulations. But later on in the month, we go up north to Carmel and perform at the Palladium on the 22nd.
And this is these are your first...
First Christmas performances in these venues.
Yeah.
We had been in churches previously, so this really, a big step, will be a big payoff, though, I think, for
audiences. Both in terms of number of seats, but also great acoustic
both
places.
Both of them. Stunning venues. So I think the whole experience for the patron, not just what you hear, but from the time you pull up in the valet parking and the wassail and cookies that will be in the lobby, I think everything will really be... vital to a really special Christmas.
Cookies reminds me, this is family-friendly. These are family-friendly performances.
That's exactly right. It's about 100 minutes with an intermission. Definitely family-friendly.
Yeah, good.
From kids to, 1 to 92? Is that how the song goes?
That sounds right.
I think so.
Yeah? Are you going to sing for us?
This is not scaryoke.
Okay, not yet anyway. So as if this isn't enough to prepare for December and for the season, there's that seasonal tradition.
Evergreen.
Evergreen.
That's exactly right. Handel's Messiah, folks. That's right. Saturday, December 15 at Clues Hall, the Symphonic Choir and the ISO, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, present the just always great Messiah. Clues Hall, 8 o'clock p.m. And this year, it's great. About every other year, Eric Stark, our artistic director. And this is an Eric year. And so he'll be on the box conducting. And that's always special for the singers to have their leader up there
mm-hmm.
with the orchestra. Great cast of soloists, including some names that will be familiar to folks around town.
Excellent, excellent. That is not a sing-along Messiah, I should point out.
That's up to you,
You may
I guess.
Sing in the car on the way home. Hey, so I know that even though as we're having this conversation, the retail holidays are all around us and we're getting ready to plunge into winter, but you're already working on what's coming up in late winter and spring, and then a summer tour. Remind me what's going on.
It's full, isn't it?
Yeah.
So in April 12th, we perform a concert at Clues of the Bach Magnificat. Beautiful piece.
Sure is.
And Morten Lauridsen, a piece by Morten Lauridsen, 20th century, very much alive, great composer from California. More than one or two Grammys to his name, shall we say. It'll be a beautiful show combining new and the old together.
And this new piece, what is the form?
That's right, Lux Aeterna. It's all about light, so different texts about light, the idea of light. And then you mentioned the tour. That's exactly right. 2013 is a special year for friends of the composer Benjamin Britten, a great 20th century English composer. And so we'll take a Britten pilgrimage. We're calling it Britten in Britten. Clever, right? It's about a week exploring Britten cultural sites, musical sites in the UK. It's a non-performance tour. Symphonic Choir is not performing. And just to experience and soak up all that great music.
What's the capacity for this tour?
It's actually small. We're capping it at, I think it's 28.
Oh, wow.
So this is haute, to mix our languages. haute, very high quality. But I think a couple of spots remain.
All right.
Yeah, so you could join us. You could brush up on the language, and I'm sure you'd be just fine.
Sharon Gamble with the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir is Michael Petrie. Learn more about the Festival of Carols at indychoir.org. Let's listen to the choir for a sneak preview. Sharon, you don't have any leftovers, do you?
Not anymore. They have been successfully recycled into various people's tummies.
Because, you know, you shouldn't keep them that long.
No, it's true.
But something else that's not left over? Things that we have on that calendar we call?
What'll we do? It's fresh and new. Fresh baked.
All holiday edition.
Indeed, indeed.
What do you got?
I have a way for you to shop for Indiana-made goods from the comfort of your favorite chair or sofa.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Easy.
Indiana Artisan, that wonderful statewide network of both artists and craftspeople, but also those with culinary skills, like chocolatiers and mm-hmm. maple syrup makers and so forth. They've launched a web portal for shopping. You go to http://shop.indianaartisan.org. So you can probably get there by just searching shop.indianaartisan.org as well. And online there, you'll find the work of nearly 60 artisans. You can find paintings and pottery and jewelry and the work of glass artists, woodworkers, soap makers, all sorts of wonderful things that we'd like to find in the Art of the Matter stockings hung by the mantle with care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, see if you're naughty or nice. That sounds great.
I'm not going there.
Shop off. Hey, I've got something fun to do between now and the holidays. This weekend at the Phoenix Theater, A Very Phoenix Xmas 7, also known as Getting Figgy With It, is going to be opening. Then this runs through December 23rd. And along with all of the other great new sketches that the Phoenix is known for bringing to their holiday show, the Suck Monkeys are back. And if you know what that means, then you know how exciting it is to have the return of the Suck Monkeys. So check out, if you want something that's not at all appropriate for kids, Getting Figgy With It at the Phoenix Theater.
Some of those Sock Monkeys were a little naughty in their inaugural appearance last year.
That's what made them so fun.
Here's something that is family-friendly. Put the kids in the car and head for Southern Indiana. It's about 2 hours door-to-door from Indianapolis to Madison. They are celebrating what they call Nights Before Christmas Candlelight Tour of Homes, which goes through this weekend. If you've never been to historic Madison, Indiana, this is a great time to check it out. The tour features six beautiful private homes in Madison and also in Hanover. And you can find out more and see some tempting photos at nightsbeforechristmas.com. While you're in Madison, make sure you stroll the several block long, beautiful Federalist era Main Street of Madison. And if you have kids with you, check out Hinkle's Hamburgers.
Oh,
as well as the candy
good.
Shops. And if you have grown-ups with you, there are some wineries in Madison. So all told, a good reason to get away for the weekend.
Hey, if you've never seen the IRT's A Christmas Carol, then what are you waiting for? It is a terrific holiday tradition, an absolutely great, very theatrical presentation. I enjoy going. Take your family this year, and make sure you actually check out all the other events they have going on with Christmas Carol, especially this year. You might want to call the theater or check their website, because almost every day that they are performing it, they have additional things such as hot chocolate tasting or cookie bazaars, or pretty much every Saturday they've got live reindeer there. They've got yes, that's right. Rudolph may even show up. They've got lots of cast talks where you can talk with members of the cast. They have a very cool thing where you can get an ornament and fill it with snow from the snow zone from the stage. So almost every day they've got something special going on if you come early to check out Christmas Carol at the IRT.
Fantastic. If you're an artist or an arts administrator who's lived in Indianapolis for a few years and would be interested in a $10,000 two-year grant to pursue something that would refresh and renew you, I have the attention of many of our listeners now, I think. Remember, the Creative Renewal Fellowships are once again available due to the amazing generosity of Lilly Endowment and the Arts Council of Indianapolis. Travis and I are both Creative Renewal Fellow alums, as are so many of our colleagues around town. This is an amazing program whose goal is to keep talented people in Indianapolis and let them do something mid-career or later that helps refresh them, refresh their spirits. You can get more information, and you want to do this pretty quickly because the applications are due December 7th. You can get more information at artscouncilofindianapolis.org, artscouncilofindianapolis.org. Look for Creative Renewal Arts Fellowship information there.
Perhaps a new tradition for your family might be going out to Connor Prairie for the holidays, because they have their new winter fun days, which includes, of course, visits with Santa, an outdoor adventure, candlelight tours, and the Gingerbread Village, which sounds pretty cool to me. Some really beautiful gingerbread homes that they have up there.
Don't eat them.
No. But but the 1836 outdoor adventure is back by popular demand in their second season, and includes a horse-drawn wagon ride, singing, storytelling around a bonfire, Lots of fun. It's just a great event out at Connor Prairie. Great for the whole family now through the holidays.
Fantastic. Here's something family friendly that you might want to put on your calendar now and maybe even go ahead and secure your tickets. On Friday, December 14th at 7:30, up at the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel, you can watch one of the films that is part of the Great American Songbook movie series. It's a partnership with Truly Moving Pictures, and on December 14th, you can see Mary Poppins. Yep, the original 1964 Dick Van Dyke, Julie Andrews classic. So put that on your calendar. Get your tickets now.
Toys is coming back. That's the Primary Colors exhibit that they do each and every year. In fact, this is the 10th year that they've been doing toys. And what they do is each year they have different artists who have been part of Primary Colors. This year, 16 artists have been invited to create toy-like art pieces, whether that involves toys or they look like toys or they reference toys, whatever it may be. It's taking place at the Primary Gallery, which is in the Murphy Arts Center down in Fountain Square. Second floor of the Murphy Arts Center is where the Primary Gallery is located, and it is always a great show. And this year, as part of it, during toys, they're going to be teaming up with the United Way and will be accepting donations of new or gently used books for kids 3 to 8 that they're going to be donating to the United Way's Read Up program. So a great thing to check out as well. But always a lot of fun. Some of the artists featured this year, Martin Kuntz, Chris Fry, Jeff Martin, Jeff Jeffries, Nathan Tomer. Can't wait to see what they've all come up with toys, which opens on Friday the 7th.
You're really just a big kid, aren't you?
You betcha.
You haven't talked about trains yet this season.
We're getting to that,
Sharon. We're getting to the train season. Hey, speaking of blasts from the past, if you're a child whose parent or grandparent has talked about going downtown, dressing up and taking the bus downtown to look at the window displays in the department stores, you can see the great old Ellis Ayers Christmas window displays at the Indiana State Museum. Yes, those were preserved and protected, and they're brought out every Christmas time as part of Celebration Crossing, which also features Santa, by the way, and lots of other groovy things to do. So you can find out more about that at the Indiana State Museum.
Okay, well, last thing I've got is I'm going to talk trains, because there are two great train exhibits going on right now for the holidays. One of them is at the Idlejorg, and that's the one, this is the third year of it, where they've created these amazing different natural wonders from all over the world and these great setups, including also sort of a creation of downtown Indianapolis that this year includes Lucas Oil, and then lots of other buildings, of course, you'll recognize on the circle, and it is absolutely stunning and worth checking out. But also another train exhibit that's really beautiful is down at Garfield Park, and this is through the Indiana Railroad Company, and this is a really lovely exhibit that takes place inside the atrium there, and it's really kind of neat, especially maybe if it's one of those cold days, or maybe it's even snowing, and you walk inside this sort of tropical wonderland down
there. It's like
there
you're in a snow globe.
Cacao trees and orchids and trains. What more do you need? So both the Idlejorg and Garfield Park have amazing train shows. Go out and see them both. That's all I got for you, Sharon.
Well, I can bring you a list of some other things I might need, but but my reminder...
Other than orchids, trains, and cacao?
Maybe one or two things. My reminder is, if you're starting to go out and oil the wheels of commerce, so to speak, don't forget to buy local art. Support local artists, buy CDs by local artists, buy artwork by local artists, give gift certificates to exhibitions and theater performances and concerts.
Great little
Homespun in Irvington.
Great crafts out
Fantastic.
In Irvington, all local as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So buy local and oil those wheels of commerce. And we'll have more things to see and do on our calendar next week.
That we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Arts Council of Indianapolis is responsible for some pretty big things, like the Arts Garden, grants to arts organizations, and the Creative Renewal Fellowships. But this holiday season, they will be downsizing when they show work by local artists that's no bigger than 6 inches by 6 inches by 6 inches for their tiny show at their Gallery 924. Travis DiNicola spoke with Shannon Linker, Director of Artist Services and Gallery 924, and Lindsay Lord, Public Art and Artist Services Coordinator, about the new exhibit.
Shannon, Lindsay, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Nice. Thank you, Travis. It's great to be here.
Use your big voices. This is not a tiny radio show. Oh, the art show may be tiny, but so this is really fun. What a great idea. How did this come about in terms of wanting to do an exhibit of very small artwork?
Well, it came about because our gallery space, as those of you that have been in the space realize, it is not your standard gallery.
Mm-hmm.
We have lots of glass windows, probably more windows than walls. We have brick walls as well, which are not ideal for hanging artwork. They pose a little bit of a challenge. So we also have a lot of wood in there. We have wood beams going all across. And so there's a very specific aesthetic when you walk in.
Sure.
It has a look that is very much Gallery 924. And so as I was walking through one day, I was looking up at the beams and I was looking at the bar and I was looking at all this interesting architectural elements. And I thought, you know what? I would love to see artwork, little surprises. I would love to see little things peeking out
throughout the
from
entire space.
The beams and around the corners and on the columns and everywhere, just completely covered, almost so much that if you don't know what you're looking for, you might miss some of it because there's just so much of it. And that's kind of what we've done.
How fun. Okay, so this has got to be a great challenge then for you, especially in terms of figuring out where everything goes. I mean, with planning that out. I mean, if you're thinking about stuff unconventionally hung or placed, I mean, underneath beams and stuff. I mean, have you been like going through the gallery trying to figure out, okay, where can things go? Or
we have, and we actually gave that to the artist, too, to
say,
if you would like to come in, take a few minutes to look around the gallery, take some pictures. If you want to create something site-specific for this column or this beam or this window, do it. We are kind of no holds barred on this.
And everything has to be 6 inches by 6 inches by 6 inches or smaller.
That's right.
How?
That was our only limitation.
So how small is the smallest thing you've seen? I mean, because I know you're still, as we're recording this, working on, you know, finalizing the show. So Lindsay, how's what's the smallest thing you've seen?
Gosh, that's a great question. I think most of them are close to 6 by 6 by 6, but there are a few that are inches, just
like
two or
grains
three.
Grains of rice?
Yeah, not quite that small, but...
So the idea was not just to be able to feature art in sort of a different way, but also be very inclusive, include a lot of Central Indiana artists. You put a call out, you invited some. Over 100 artists participating, is that real? Is that true?
Right around 100, yes.
That's crazy.
As I said, we're still kind of working through those numbers, but we are right at 100, or give or take a few. And some of those are video artists, and most of them are your standard kind of visual artists, painters and sculptors and you know, things like that. But yeah, what we did was we did want to make this as broad as possible. So we sent out a call knowing that if everything's tiny, we can fit in a lot of artists. Now, this might be more than we bargained for. I don't know. But the idea of being as inclusive as possible made sense with our other project that's going on that we're participating in, is the relaunch of the Be Independent movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that is completely inclusive of everything that's unique to Indianapolis. And so we thought, what better way to highlight the relaunch of that movement and the excitement going on there with including as many and artists as we can and the most variety that we can too.
And the Be Independent movement is essentially a advocacy marketing effort that the Arts Council has done before to promote local artists, to buy local artists, support the work of local artists. Let's reverse that. To buy the work of local artists by supporting local artists. There we go.
Right, exactly. Yes, we started in 2007 when groups like IDOTA were having a great time getting people out into the galleries and sipping wine and enjoying the work and having great conversations, but yet the sales weren't there. So we wanted to say it was kind of a buy local movement just for art. But now it's evolved, and now it's about coffee shops and bookstores and retail shops and everything. Anything that's independently owned, we're supporting.
So how is that going to be then? What is the Arts Council doing to push that? I mean, before there were great bumper stickers. I remember there were some ads and stuff. What else is going to be going on with this?
Well, what we're doing is we're building up our partnerships. So we're going to have more stickers because those are fun, I think. And our new tagline is Create, Buy, Be Local.
Okay.
We'll still have the Buy Indie Art, but we're just trying to be more inclusive. And we're partnering with the Indie Chamber. And we're partnering with Yelp and Visit Indy to really expand the reach and to really provide more tangible services to these businesses, these small businesses that really mean so much to us, not only creating a unique place to live, but financially as well. And if we all supported them, they could give us back so much more. And so that's kind of what we're working with these partnerships.
And of course, during the holidays, it's a great time to do it. So that's being launched as part of the Tiny Show. But let's get back to the Tiny Show because I've got a question here for the two of you. You do realize with most gallery openings, not just the artists show up, but the artists' friends and families. So even though the work's really tiny, I mean, if you've got 100 artists showing up at the 924, I mean, this is going to be a big night.
It is. I hope the weather's nice because we may need.
Your eyes got a little big for both of you when I said that.
Well, right. We're going to tell artists, we want you to show up, but don't feel like you have to
don't
stay all
to bring
night.
Anybody or, don't stay too long, right? Okay. So I want to hear more about the artwork. You you'd mentioned video. So small video screens, like iPod screens or something, or is that a possibility?
That is a possibility. We've thought about that. We're still working on how we will work with them, but Lindsay can tell you a little bit more about the partnership that we've created to get the video.
Just recently. So we reached out to the Indianapolis International Film Festival and are viewing some of their Hoosier Lens category shorts.
Okay.
So we're hoping to show some of these.
So, I mean, for that, though, does the screen have to be less than 6 inches? Is that the plan at all? Or is it just short movies that fit into the tiny category? I'm trying to see how this all plays out.
Well, hopefully it'll be both.
Yeah.
They're going to be shorts, of course, so they'll be, small and in length. But we're trying to find a unique way to present them, which would be a screen less than 6 inches, ideally.
Maybe. Okay.
We hope.
Okay. So can you give me an idea of some of the other work besides the video work, the physical work that artists are creating that you've seen come in, some stuff that just really stands out to you already as you're sorting through it, either of you work that just is where people have been having a lot of fun with the idea of making something so small?
Well, some of the things that I was really excited about and still am is the idea of the site-specific installation or drawings. For example, Joseph Krohn, who does really detailed drawings, just amazingly detailed. Most people think they are a black and white photo when they see them. He's considering coming in and doing a small little drawing right on the wall somewhere in the gallery.
Cool.
There's another artist who is creating a little kind of ocean scene that will be hanging from the ceiling, and it'll be just kind of a little sea that's floating in the in the air with the little boats and little waves, and it's just really interesting. And he came into the gallery to see the space and to figure out, how will this fit and how will it work, and so he's one of those that really tried to figure it out. There's Stacey Holloway. Lindsay, can you tell about her piece?
Sure. Stacey created this, it's called Bridge to Comfort, and it's this small wooden bridge that she places on the end of her nose and on the end of the nose of an acquaintance or a family member or a friend. And that interaction is then photographed, and the resulting image goes in this little booklet where she explains their relationship, how they are related, and how long that relationship has spanned time. So
that's terrific. So a bridge across the bridges of the nose.
Exactly.
Spanning the two. That's great.
Yes. And she also plans to have visitors to the opening interact with the piece as well. She's hoping to have them participate as well.
Now, has anyone got involved in doing any sort of other, I mean, that sounds like a mini bridge, like any other miniaturization of like small figures or any sort of small scenes? I mean, when I think of tiny, I think of, you know, almost like, you know, especially because I guess we're getting close to the holidays, you know, tiny toy soldiers or little, you know, plastic army men crawling over that bridge or whatever it may be, but nothing yet, you know?
Well,
yeah.
There, you know, a lot
maybe
of
I should have
pieces,
submitted a piece. I don't
well, yeah. Know. A lot of the pieces are miniatures, smaller version of the artist's work that they normally do. You know, so it's just kind of shrinking that down to fit. There are a lot of small figures, but a lot of them are painted or photographed or something like that. I can't think of off the top of my head.
And most of the work's for sale, is that right?
Almost all of it, yes. And that's one of the goals, of course, is to... We want everybody to, it would be a wonderful thing if everyone bought original art for the holidays. Wouldn't that be awesome? And that's our main goal with this, is to have a party, buy some art while you're here, and you can pick it up right before the holidays to make sure you can give it to them.
Nice. Well, and that's the thing. I do really like it when artists have shows and they do include some smaller pieces, not necessarily tiny pieces, but, you know, I mean, for those of us who are, you know, a little more budget conscious. I mean, I certainly, my wife and I have a number of works by artists that are kind of smaller versions of other things. And that's I love that when artists do that in their regular shows. So to have a whole gallery of small work makes it a little bit easier for everybody, right?
Right, hopefully.
Great stocking stuffers.
Exactly.
So any other fun favorite pieces you want to share with us before we wrap this up?
Another one I'm kind of excited to see is Rachel Baxter's piece. She's going to take these really delicate relief prints that sort of resemble fungus you see on trees. Sort of that disc-like protrusion, and she will put that on those wooden columns we have in the gallery.
Oh, cool. Excellent. So very site-specific again.
Yes.
Well, I'm looking forward to this very big show that you're calling Tiny and seeing all the work there, and I wish you both the best of holidays as well.
Likewise.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks for coming in today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Travis DiNicola with Shannon M. Lenker, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Director of Artist Services and Director of Gallery 924, and Lindsay Lord, Public Art and Artist Services Coordinator for the Arts Council. The holiday show Tiny opens on Friday, December 7th at Gallery 924, located at, surprise, 924 Pennsylvania. More information is available at indiearts.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I check out the Indianapolis School of Ballet's Nutcracker.
I'll chat with Tom Akins about his new memoir, Behind the Copper Fence.
Please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.